Powered by Rev Media in partnership with TSN, it is Season 5, Episode 67. It is a playoff edition of the Rain Dregs Hockey Podcast, presented by our title sponsor, Canadian Club Whiskey, who's asking, have you tried the Canadian Club Ginger Ale? It's a crisp, refreshing alternative to beer. Well-balanced flavors of ginger. There's the subtle notes of rye and spice. The new formula is 30% less sugar, 20% fewer calories. Yes, it is delicious. That is Canadian Club Ginger Ale. Ray, we've got a lot to cover here, and obviously we'll look back quickly on Game 6 and look forward to Game 7. There's such a buzz right now around the Canucks and the Oilers, and we'll do that. But, you know, before we start, and I'm sure you share my sentiment here, I can't tell you how heartwarming it has been to see the outpouring of love for our pal Darren Detisha, who passed away last week from cancer. I mean, the world of sports, as we know, is a family, and the tributes coast to coast on social media, the national newscast, Hockey Night in Canada. I mean, so fitting and so awesome. And this is the way Dutch would want it, right? When you get past the obvious, which is just a sea of emotion and despair and heartbreak. And the man was 57 years old. He leaves so many of us good friends and his close family behind. But at least in my tiny brain, it's now shifted, and we'll mourn for a long, long time, but to a celebration of life. And we're sitting in one of the green rooms at TSN on Saturday night in preparation for Game 6 throughout the game with James Duthie and Frankie Corrado, and Puffy was in there, and Craig Button and Billy Dodson. And I mean, you know, we're trying to watch the hockey game because that's what we're there to do, but there must have been 20 Dutchy stories, and every one of them were belly laughs.
Dregs, when you were talking about it, I just started to smile because it was impossible to read one person's thoughts of sympathy and then a story. And everything with Dutch was a story. And I can't think of too many people I've come across in my life that I would describe as a powerhouse. And when Dutchie came into the room with his voice and he'd say hello to everybody, and all of a sudden the room changed. And the first time I saw him, I was playing, must have been with the Islanders, and he was on ITV in Edmonton. And somehow the BC channel picked up ITV every night. And so he was doing the highlights there. And I was like, who is this guy? He's hilarious. And night after night, it was one after another. And then he went to TSN, of course, and exploded onto the, you know, our country's scene. And there are so, from a contract negotiation, from his line about when Daniel Sedin and his wife had a baby, and he says, I don't want to start any rumors, but the word is the kid looks like Henrik. And it was one after another. And there was a warmth to Dutch it's, man, when people pass early, it's so sad. When you know them, of course, it's another level. You were very close. I didn't get to be around him as much as I would have liked to have been. But over time, we got to connect through golf and sports and, you know, and any goofy thing that he wanted to say. And, Matt, he just made everywhere that he was around a bigger, better, more laugh-filled place. It's really sad. And I can't even imagine how you guys must have been laughing last night, because it's one after another. He asked what he said. Somebody asked him how many bench presses he could bench press James Duthie. And he said, instantly, he said 25. He goes, you know, I'd get a grip on those chompers of his. He goes, I could really grip on 25. I'm like, who comes up with that? But it's just, you know, As we laugh about it, or just condolences to his family and friends. And man, oh man, he was a funny, funny, funny man.
It's so much fun with him. And we've seen a couple of the photos that have been posted on social media. And there's one with his boys, right? And I think they're playing Pebble Beach. And I used to tease Dutch all the time. And I mean, he could backhand slap me across the green in a heartbeat, right? But I'd say, hey, Dutch, you got your boys medium on again, right? Like, he had such enormous arms and chest. I mean, I don't even, like, he'd have to get his shirts custom made, his golf shirts, just to get them around. And so the sleeves were always right up around the bicep, right? Because he couldn't pull them below like the rest of us average schmoes. Yeah, Dutch, you got your boys medium on again today? Good one. you're right, though. You know, again, it's great that we can chuckle and have a smile and a laugh in his honor. Because that's what he meant to everybody. And I mean everybody, not just those watching him on TV. If you saw him at events as we did when we used to travel and cover the Stanley Cup Final and Sports Center was on the road, man, he was a man of the people.
He was a rock
would
star.
Wade in there.
He was a rock star. He really was. Everybody wanted a piece of saying hello to Dutch.
Tremendous. Yeah. Rest in peace, Dutchie. Time for headlines, Ray, brought to you by Tim Hortons. Hey, the new flatbread pizzas are perfect for any occasion, from that satisfying workday lunch or a crowd-pleasing option for family dinners or weekend gatherings. Fresh to order, and they're oven-baked, starting at just $6.99. All right, Game 7, Monday night in Vancouver. We're recording here on Sunday morning, just hours post Game 6, and what a game that was in favor of the Edmonton Oilers. Now, you know, I'm going to say the Canucks whiffed on an opportunity to close the series. I mean, that's Captain Obvious in Game 6. But, Ray, from your eye, your perspective, I mean, among other things, the Canucks just seemed to lack urgency in that hockey game. Where was it?
Okay,
how do you explain it?
This has become a term that gets used more and more often, this urgency. They lack this. They lack desperation. Sometimes you just don't have it. And what you think is your top gear, the other team has found another gear. And sometimes you go to the rink and you do not have legs. When I watched the second period of game five, I was at the game in Vancouver. I don't know what happened to the Oilers between the end of the first period and the start of the second period, but they had no legs. They couldn't keep up. They got totally dominated. That game was close to the end and probably shouldn't have been. However, it was, and Edmonton was that close to pushing it to overtime. But they had no legs. Vancouver in Game 6 was slow. They were slow to react. They had no jump. And part of that is Edmonton had it. Like, I think we forget that when one team doesn't have their game, some of the reason is your opponent doesn't let you breathe.
Agreed. Yeah,
and I thought the big moment in the game was in the first period. It's 1-1. Vancouver had two power plays, one by Draisaitl, one by McDavid, and they didn't get a shot on either power play. Like, that's slow. It's predictable. It's mixed with really good Oiler penalty killing. The two things always happen together, and that was a big chance gone. And then in 4 minutes in the second period, it's 3-1, and they were pretty much in control. Vancouver had one more chance after they killed off, I guess, about 50 seconds of Oiler 5-on-3. They had their own 50 seconds of 5-on-3. If they were going to get back in it, they needed to score there. So I look at the special teams game. I don't know how much of a factor it'll be in Game 7. I can't imagine there's going to be 8 power plays, but that will be somewhat a factor. Is can somebody score on a power play? If I were to bet on someone, you'd think on a power play, you'd think the Oiler power play is more dangerous. But in one game, one night, no. And we've played 6 games, win, loss, win, loss, win, loss. Now you come to Game 7. That's what Game 7 is supposed to be. They're the best. They're the very best. And I'm lucky enough. I'm going to get to broadcast it with my buddy John Butchergross for ESPN.
Nice.
So it will be wild in there, and it will be one hell of a game. I got to say, Chris Knobloch showed some real good acumen, guts, a little back to Stuart Skinner. I thought.
Yeah.
Pickard had played really well, but you're still going to put the other guy back in the net. I mean, he's your best, but you still got to do it. And he made that move, and now we go to game seven.
So just further to that point. So, yeah, Knobloch makes the goalie change. Stu Skinner is capable, and he wanted the net back. He gets the net back. So there would have been conversation with Knobloch. But Pettersson post-game, and, I mean, nobody's happy after a loss. Nobody. I mean, Vancouver Canucks well aware they could have closed the series, and they didn't get it done. And it's a cliche term that we all use. It is what it is. All right? So Pettersson uses that. When he was asked about why so few shots, you know, they had 9 shots on net, you know, through 2 periods.
Right,
of play.
Right.
But that's probably a combination of things, right? Okay, yeah. You know, Vancouver wasn't as sharp as they needed to be, but the structure of the Edmonton Oilers was sound. But does it feel like a missed opportunity when you've got a new goalie in there? They had misgivings, which is why they put Pickard in the net in the first place in this series. Why not do everything you can to pepper him with shots? Or is that more to do with what Edmonton was doing?
Well, but I think they'd like to. Right? Like, I mean, the goal is not to get 9 shots. I don't know. Do you think Colorado is a good offensive team?
Yeah, really good.
In game 4, they had 4 shots at the 30-minute mark. Like, how does that even happen?
It's hard.
Like, and this is why I think, as I've gotten older, like, I think this is why I appreciate sport more and more, like all of it, is because of the total unpredictability of it. Like, there's no way you should be able to win games when you get 15 shots on net. Vancouver has done that. Edmonton won in LA. They had 13 shots. Like, how is that even possible? But on that night, it seems to work. If you were looking for an introspective comment from Elias Pettersson, you weren't going to get it. I mean, you weren't expecting that, were you? He's not.
No, I was a bit surprised he was out there, to be fair.
Yeah, like that's just not his way. I think Edmonton played well. I think Vancouver played poorly. I think it doesn't matter for game 7. I would assume the legs will be better for Vancouver, and I would assume Edmonton will play at a really high level. And it is, it's Game 7s are, I mean, this is really obvious, but one of them is a face plant. Season over.
Yeah.
Right? Like, everything goes in. They've played what? They've played 100 games this year, more or less. And it's going to, for one of them, at 9:30 or so Pacific time, it's going to end on Monday night. Yeah. Finished. And it is the pressure, the excitement that Dregs, as you know, you've been around them a long time. I got to play in 3 of them. They're the best. Like, they're just so great. And it will be, there's nothing that separates the teams. If you get this far and you win-loss your way to game 7, each team's got something a little stronger than the other, and that's why we're here. And who gets to do it? Who gets to impose their game longer? We'll get to play Dallas, and the other team is going to go home.
Too much at stake for your lovely wife, Cammy, to care about your prediction of the Oilers in 6. She's not worrying about that.
I will say, preparing for game 7. She has heard from a few of the guys that when she sees them, they're like, "Hey, Cammy, what's the deal with your husband? Like, what's his problem?" So she needs me making predictions like a hole in the head, right? Thanks for bringing that up. Really appreciate it, Drace. Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, no problem, buddy. Potentially one for the ages. Looking forward to it on Monday night. Dallas has had a bit of time of rest. Not a ton, and they'll get a little bit more as the Western Conference Final starts on Thursday. Aren't we at a stage here, Ray? And usually when you get through the second round, you're going into the Conference Finals. It's almost a flip-em scenario. I mean, you can't disrespect either Edmonton or Vancouver and say that they don't have as good a chance as Dallas does of winning that series. You can't. But does a bit of a break help Dallas even a little bit? Or is that, again, just one of those things we lean on in analyzing series?
The only reason it helps, and they'll start Thursday, by the way, the Yeah, the West is now Thursday start. It helps Dallas because they didn't have Roope Hintz for games 5 and 6. And if he's out for, they say day to day, but I mean, whatever that means, right? Like, but if Hintz isn't in that series, that's a big miss. It's a big loss for Dallas. He's a terrific player, and he drives a lot of the pace of their game. They would miss him. So I'm going to say the time off does matter for Dallas in that regard. Also, I don't know, is Chris Tanev going to get a chance to go to the dentist? I mean, like, oh my God, I'm doing the game in Dallas.
It's unreal.
Game 5. He gets hit with McKinnon's helmet in the mouth. He goes into the locker room, and they don't pull his tooth, but they've got to straighten it and push it forward. He misses, like, I don't know, 8 minutes. And he goes back there, and he goes, yeah. And the way he's describing it in the interview is like, yeah, they just had to get it, and I could pull it back out so I could get my top lip over top. I'm like, oh. What?
It was so matter of fact. It was like it happens every game. Like,
and so in game 6, I mean, what a free agent or what a trade acquisition for Dallas. They don't give up a first rounder.
No,
they give up a second
good.
And a prospect.
Yeah.
He plays about 26 minutes. He blocks 9 shots. He plays the first 2 rounds against Eichel and McKinnon.
Yeah.
Like, he's been tremendous for them. Just tremendous.
Yeah. Look, he's earned his right to unrestricted free agency, and who knows? You know, he might have a destination in mind for family reasons, right? But if he doesn't, I'm a bit surprised that they haven't already inked an extension. No different than what, you know, Vegas did with Noah Hanifin, right?
Could you imagine, just looking at his demeanor, if they said, hey, we'd like to explore signing you, he'd probably go, yeah, let's just wait a minute.
Yeah.
Like, we'll get to it.
We'll get to it.
You know, like, he doesn't look like he's too flustered about much. And the crazy part is, look at his brother who plays in Seattle. Oh. He looks like he's on, you know, he's going 150 miles an hour everywhere.
He does. You know, the pictures of Brandon are hilarious, right? He's always got the wide eyes and just like somebody scared the living crap out of him like a second before the picture. It's outstanding. All right. Well, we're looking forward to the West because that's on the docket now. What about the Eastern Conference,
which
kicks off on Wednesday at MSG in New York? Florida and the Rangers. And this, again, has the potential of being just one of the great series in history, recent history anyway, if it lives up to the billing. We know what the Florida Panthers are capable of. And you have been, if not on the bandwagon, you've been certainly a strong advocate for the game of the New York Rangers, basically from the early part of the season.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this, and I'm super pumped that's the series we're doing. How about there's a, you know, if you're around the game long enough, like Peter Laviolette and Paul Maurice, there's always something that's kind of odd about it. And I forget the order, but either Maurice was fired, replaced by Laviolette, who was replaced by Maurice.
Yeah.
Or it's the other way around. I get it confused. I'll get it organized by Wednesday when the series starts.
No, that's right. So hold on. Let's quickly go back. I believe it was your – yes. So Laviolette replaced Maurice. And then you remember Jimmy Rutherford was in a bind. Paul was on the sidelines. And then I think he dumped – Laviolette, and Paul went back to help him out.
Right.
And then stayed for another 2 seasons.
Just think of that. Like, and now these guys are in the Eastern Conference Finals against each other. It's just, this is what I think my early view of this is. They play very differently. And there's going to be portions of the games where Florida is going to control the game because they're aggressive and physical, and their style will control the game. But their style can get them into trouble if they're not all connected. And when you have a team like the Rangers, they can rip that part.
Yeah.
They move the puck. They're fast. They're strong and big. I think this is a phenomenal series. I think the Rangers, there's just something about this team that this feels really like it's their time. And one of the things I would say is, like, they haven't had much adversity in the playoffs. They rolled through Washington. But when they got into this next series, when Carolina put them on the ropes,
yeah,
a couple of times in game, the Rangers were able to find their way out. Like, they didn't panic. They just, you know, it was Kreider in game six with the three goals. And, like, I think the Rangers are really, really good. Florida is a terrific team. Like, yeah. I think this is a long – this series is going to end June the 3rd, by the way. That's yeah. when it's going to end.
Game and that'll seven. Be
the, game seven is June the 3rd, which means I'll be in New York on June the 3rd.
I think it's you know, we look forward to the conference finals every single year, no different than you look forward to the Stanley Cup final, the playoffs in general. But there's just a certain amount of spice that I think we're going to see, you know, certainly in the East and predictably in the West as well, no matter who the Dallas Stars play. It's just such a fun time of year. And with the Canadian involvement, we're yeah. Canadian, so we're biased in that, or at least I am in that regard. It's such a fun time of year, and the storylines are endless as you look forward to the teams rating. How about this? You know, not writing off the Edmonton Oilers here yet. First time in NHL history, if Vancouver wins, all four division winners will meet in the conference finals. First really? Time ever.
You know
yeah,
what?
I read that yesterday.
You know what? I'm going to steal that for our yeah. open tomorrow.
Well, you better check to make sure.
Yeah, it's good true, point. But... Don't worry. I'll suggest it, and someone will go, yeah, it's probably
yeah, wrong. That's not right. Well, Duffy already used it on Saturday night, so.
And yeah, he, but he says it with confidence, so it must
he
be right.
He does. We just kind of joked a little bit about the Carolina Hurricanes and referencing the days of Peter Laviolette and Paul Maurice. Some off-ice news in Carolina. So the on-again, off-again extension of Rod Brind'Amour has been completed. So Brind'Amour, amid the endless rumors, gets his multi-year contract extension to stay in Carolina. It is a five-year deal. And just as important to Rod, the fact that his assistants and his staff also extended. So first, I want your thought on what that means to this Hurricanes organization, because there's all kinds of speculation as to what Tom Dundon is going to do moving forward, you know, walking away from pending unrestricted free agents like Gensel and Pesci, like, and just kind of flushing things again to what becomes of Don Waddell as general manager. Lots of speculation that his days in Carolina are soon going to be over. But first, your thoughts on the extension of Rod.
I think Rod Brind'Amour means more to that team and that organization than any other coach in the NHL. And I'm not sure because I've never met him, but I'm not sure the owner really understands that. There, you know, we get to meet coaches every game. We get to talk to them every game. And there's just, like, to say the face of the franchise in, like, it's Rod. It's Rod on almost every level. Excuse me. I think I'm happy for the Hurricanes that they would sign him, because I think he's a tremendous coach. And I, as I just said, I do believe his importance to that team cannot be understated. Now, they have, I want to say they got 11 guys going to unrestricted free agency. It will be a very, very different team. Some guys they'll probably sign, some they'll let go. The challenge is, if you're bringing in eight guys, are they all going to be able to mesh? The chances are not. And that some of them will be misses. And like, this will be a big coaching job to get everybody on the same page, if the lineup is as different as I suspect it might be. Like, I suspect that on the middle of May, whatever day it is today. It will be a very different Carolina team that goes to training camp next year.
And, you know, it'll be a different front office likely as well. I allude to, you know, the potential future change of Don Waddell as general manager. I mean, media speculation wants to connect him with the Columbus Blue Jackets. So we'll see what ends up there. But one thing we know is Donnie is good people. He is a tremendous executive. And in addition to his decorated hockey resume. Where he might be missed arguably the most is on the business side. Like, this guy is a sharp, sharp guy. So there's lots of stories that are going to come out around the Carolina Hurricanes in the days ahead. But I think you're bang on here. Significant change on and off the ice is definitely in the forecast there. Craig Berube, named head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs on Saturday. Not even a little bit of surprise. We had talked about it on a few podcasts prior to, of course, and there was so much speculation around there. A four-year deal, and even leading up to the official announcement, you saw the videos on social media, right, of that famous speech where, you know, Berube is in the dressing room of the St. Louis Blues prior to winning the Stanley Cup.
I thought when you're talking about the speech, I thought you said the video. I thought you were going to say when he was leaning on
hammering all his stars.
No, when he was giving it to – so him and Shanahan getting – did you see that?
Oh, yeah, I did. Oh, yeah.
Man, yeah. Now Shanny was tough, but he might have bit off a bit more than he could chew there. And oof. And you're – I was looking at that, and I'm like, oh, man, the game was different then, boy.
Oh. What kind of coach is he going to be for Toronto? And in your opinion, is he the right fit?
Well, the word accountability comes out all the time. And you can hold people accountable, but they have to be able to do what you need them to ask.
Yeah.
And the second part of this is whatever the discussions were between Shanahan, Treliving, and Berube would be about, okay, we have the core five-ish, I guess. Yeah. You always include Riley in it now, I guess. We have this core five, so... if they're back, how are we going to coach this team? If they're not all back, how are we going to coach this team? What would you like to happen? Because those are three different scenarios and they're all very possible. And so, I mean, you can say accountability, like what are you going to do if the player doesn't want to do it or can't do it? You can only hold them so accountable. One thing that will be certain is the guys will know exactly what he wants. Because he's going to tell them. And there's not a lot of flowery speeches from Chief. Like, that's not his way. This is what it is. It's what I'm going to tell you. And then I need you to do it. And can you do it or can you not? And then that will get them to the next stage. But there will be no, and I thought this was a weakness of Sheldon Keefe's that I think he grew past. There will be no criticism of a player and the next day apologizing for it.
Right.
That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's got, he's not nervous. He's not fearful. He's just, what you see is what you get.
Yeah. Well, and I would think, just to emphasize your point here, and you would have played for coaches like that, right? And I'm talking about Craig Berube here because, and it doesn't have to be the analysts like, you know, Carlo Colaiacovo. We had Wayne Simmonds on trade deadline in studio, and he talked about Craig Berube as being one of the best coaches or the best coach he ever played for. Every player, ex-player says the same thing. You know, tell me what you want, and I'll try and do that to the best of my ability. Isn't that, as a player, what you want? And you also know when... you haven't played to your highest ability. So when the coach calls you out on it, it's not a surprise. And you're okay with that.
Yeah, except some guys say they want that. And then when they get it, they don't want it.
That's the sick thing.
Like the guy, you know, I've talked about Al Arbor umpteen times. And, man, his meetings were about 3 minutes. There was not a lot to them because here it is. And like he literally told me in one meeting what he needed from me. And I was standing there and he goes, well, anything else? And I was like, no. And then he goes, okay. So I turned around and left. Like he told me what he wanted. He said, Seagull, you got 3 games to get going. And if you don't get going, you'll be sitting with Claire. Claire was his wife. And he goes, and she's been in the same damn seats for 22 years. And I was just standing there and he goes, anything else? And I'm like, no. And he goes, well, okay. Oh, and that was it.
You'd be sitting with Claire.
And so I was like, oh my God, what just happened? But the key to that, and I think this is the same with, would be of the same with Craig, is that he gave me the opportunity, Dregs, after the message of get going, he gave me three games because that was left before the playoffs. He gave me three games to get going. So he gave me the opportunity after the message. And then if I couldn't deliver, he needed to do something different for the team.
Right.
Like that's as fair as it can be.
I think that's
the best way.
All right. Well, now we're focused on the New Jersey Devils. You know, Tom Fitzgerald is hoping to hire his coach this week. That's, you know, according to sources this morning, Sunday, as we record the pod. 3 to 4 candidates still in the mix. Sheldon Keefe is still contemplating if he's ready to return. I wouldn't anoint him as the front runner in this process. Well, he can't be because he's not putting his name officially into the ring. But even if he does, you know, then Fitzy at least is looking at a level playing field here. You know, am I looking at Todd McClellan? Apparently, Jay Woodcroft had an excellent interview. That doesn't necessarily surprise me, but I'm just giving him a shout out because he interviewed very well in New Jersey. And Keith could be in that mix as well. You know, Todd did a great job in his interviewing in Toronto. Winnipeg tells me that he was excellent in their virtual interview as well. So if you're Fitzy and you're looking at what you've got, is there hesitation with Sheldon because he's pushing a week now and he's not giving you a firm answer? Are you looking at Todd because of his experience and his history and everything that he's got going and thinking he might be the guy that can push you forward? I mean, put your GM hat on.
Well, if Sheldon is debating whether he's emotionally ready to coach, I use the word emotionally. I mean, like, if he's, that's maybe not the best word. If he's ready to dive back in, if he's hesitant about that, it would make me hesitant. And he's totally in the right space, Sheldon Keefe is, if he wants to take some time. Like, we've talked to enough coaches, man, you cannot do this job halfway.
Right.
Or even three quarters of the way in. Like, you know, like for him, he's got a young family. He's would have to move. That means uprooting everybody. And is he ready to do that when, if you, you know, he's probably doing a little bit of a, like all these coaches do, they start to do a little bit of a deep dive on the potential teams. And because they don't know the other teams, they know their team. Then they get a pre-scout and then they know that team for one day. So he's learning about this, about the Devils while he's trying to decide whether he wants to do it or not. I'm a big Todd McClellan fan. I really am. I think he's,
yeah, me too.
I think he's an excellent coach. Jay Woodcroft had that blast out of the gate for the first year and a bit, and then it fell apart. So that would give me some hesitation without being in the meeting of, why was it so good and why did it go so south? Like, I'd want to know that. And I'm sure that's what Fitz has done in his interviews. And, so I, you know, I mean, I wouldn't be able to front run anybody, but, I would want my coach in place pretty quickly here because it's time to go to work and you got a couple of months to try and establish what your format's going to be. So the players know when they get to camp.
Yeah. Well, as I said, that'll happen this week. So we'll analyze when the hire is made, but I would expect by midweek or so, they'll have a coach in New Jersey. Those are your headlines. Thank you to Tim Hortons.
Introducing Tim's new flatbread pizza, freshly prepared and served hot out of the oven. Available in chicken parmesan, pepperoni, bacon everything, and simply cheese. There's a new Tim's run in town. New flatbread pizza. Try one today.
Our interviews on Ray and Dregs are brought to us by Canadian Club 1858 Original. Flagship whiskey for Canadian Club. It's where it all began, aged over 3 years in oak barrels before being bottled. The result is, you know, the smoothest possible flavor, spicy, zesty, with hints of rich oak and sweet vanilla. All right, we've got to get on with a long weekend here, Ray. We've got stuff to do. It's Sunday morning. Yep. We got to, you know, get ready for game 7 in Vancouver tomorrow.
There you go.
Just a quick personal thought for you. You know, we talk a lot about our families here on the Rain Drakes podcast. Spent a wonderful couple of days in Thunder Bay, Ontario, where my daughter, Katie Dreger, graduated from Borealaskan Law Faculty at Lakehead University. Man, what an experience for Holly and I and the family. Because it's an Indigenous-based school, the day started on Friday morning with a blanket ceremony. And really what it is, is all of the local Indigenous people, you know, bring you all into this auditorium. You are escorted in. You walk as a family on a bed of cedar boughs on the floor. You take a seat. You've got prayers. You've got the great drumming, singing, everything that goes on with all the Indigenous leaders. It was off the charts good. I got smudged. Have you ever been smudged, Ray?
Don't know what that is. Tell me.
Well, it's one of the leaders walks around with not a tray, but a container of something smoking, and it's to cleanse you, right? So experienced that. You know, got to drape Katie in a blanket, which was presented again by one of the Indigenous leaders, Holly and I, to protect her moving forward. And then, I mean, it was very emotional. It was very, very emotional. Not the best part, but right up there for me, because, you know, I'm a man of the land. They treated us with moose stew and walleye for lunch right after.
And?
Oh, delicious. I get to jump right in the vat of moose stew.
That might have been outside of protocol. I don't know.
Yeah, that wouldn't have been great.
That sounds awesome. Congratulations to Katie.
It's
a lot of hard work and a fabulous achievement to get through. And congrats to the family as well, but to Katie especially. Right.
Thank you, Ray. So what's rest of Sunday look like?
Riley's got a game today at 6, so I'm really happy that I get to watch him 2 weeks in a row. That's pretty awesome, the way the schedule worked out. Prep for Vancouver and Edmonton tomorrow, although I think I got a pretty good handle on that. And then then on the flight on Tuesday to New York for a game 1 of Florida-New York on Wednesday. So, and then it's Rangers, Florida for the next 2 weeks.
It's going to be a belt tightener, that one, too. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll work out. Look, I mean, who's kidding who? Anybody who listens or watches us on our YouTube channel knows that we got to dart all over the weekly map, right?
I think Thursday morning is when the next one hits. Because,
okay.
Well, and the reason I guess it could be Tuesday. Well, no, I'm going to be on a flight. Can I do it on a plane? No.
No. That would be cool if you could.
Oh, the people beside me would just love that when they listen to half a conversation.
We'll figure it out. We'll have to do one before Thursday because we're looking back at game 7.
Oh, you know what? I'm predicting
Wednesday morning?
Wednesday morning. There it is. Wednesday morning. We will be taping at 9 Eastern.
All right. Ryan and Zuby will love that. That
just fabulous.
Means that it's 6 a.m. Pacific or... What is it, 7 a.m.?
Yeah, sorry, Zuby.
Yeah.
That's all I can
do. That's all right. All right, buddy. Well, enjoy
soccer.
Good luck with game 7. We'll be listening. We'll be watching. And I can't wait. I actually wish it was tonight, even though that would mean you'd have to miss soccer.
Yeah, no, this is better. I'm happy with this scheduling. Looking forward to it. Everybody, thanks for listening. Congratulations to Katie on her graduation. And rest in peace, Dutch.
Yeah. Thank you, Ray. And thank you to our sponsors who continue to support Ray and Dregs and make the pod possible. Our title sponsor, Canadian Club Whiskey, and Tim Hortons. Until next time, stay safe, everyone.